Welcome to this week's episode of Insight. In this week's show, we're going to cover three topics. The first one is going to be a very interesting war of words between the regime in Baku and the Russian peacekeepers in Artsakh. The second one is going to be a resolution that was passed through the French Senate calling for a strong sanctions regime against the government in Baku. And lastly, a very interesting expose of the BBC getting involved in a pay-to-play operation. As you know, this is the third week of our fundraising drive. And every week I come and ask you to make sure that you're contributing to CivilNet. And why is that important? Because again, freedom of the press is not free. For us to be independent and to be able to speak as freely as we do and cover all the things that we do, we need your help. We need you to stand behind us. So I'm going to ask you to go to the donate button, contribute to us, and preferably do so on a monthly basis. Sign up on your credit card to give to CivilNet every month. Thank you for your support. Let's move on to the first topic of the week, which is a very interesting war of words between the Russian peacekeepers in Artsakh and the regime in Baku. We're going to go over these one by one, and these were multiple press releases that went back and forth. The first one was about the Russian peacekeepers using Armenian names for the villages in Artsakh, which the regime in Baku objected to, and they called these names fictitious, which is actually interesting because that's the telltale sign of cultural genocide when you're denying a name of a place where people have lived in since time immemorial. That tells you a lot about the intentions of the regime. The second one was about the use of the word Karabakh, which apparently, according to the LAF regime, no longer exists. You can't use that word, which is a word that the Russian peacekeepers always use. And the third one was the Russian peacekeepers confirming aggressions against the civilians of Artsakh that was carried out by the regime in Baku, and they were obviously objecting to that. Now, looking back at this, you know, what are we supposed to make of this, especially at a time, at a juncture in which there's a very clear, a close working relationship between the regime in Baku and Moscow, whether it's laundering oil or other things that they're doing together. And what it is frankly, politics is complicated, especially in situations like this. It could very well be that state interests between Russia and the LAF regime align when it comes to attacking or marginalizing Armenia, but they don't necessarily do so in Artsakh. What is the difference? In Artsakh, Aliyev wants ethnic cleansing and he wants it now. And that is simply not in the interest of the Russian state at this point. This, however, does not mean the Russian peacekeepers are in Artsakh to protect the Armenian residents of Artsakh that have lived there for thousands of years. But this is simply a side effect of them being there. As a follow-up to this, we're going to go to the events of this weekend in which some of Aliyev's agents, gunmen dressed in civilian clothes, came in and blocked the primary highway from Goris to Stepanakert for 3 hours. They were eventually pushed out, negotiated out, and they left. These were obviously either soldiers in civilian clothes or people working for him. And what is this all about? And it's actually simple. It's about questioning the right of Armenia's access to Artsakh. Secondly, they want to show that they can have the ability to close that highway whenever they want, which is the only highway, the lifeline highway that links Artsakh to Armenia. Third is obviously to create their gangster-type intimidation tactics of people in Artsakh, because that's their intention, is to intimidate people to leave. Corollary to this, which came right before this, was statements, absurdist statements made by the Aliyev's foreign minister about how this road is being used illegally to transport mines into Artsakh. And then those mines are placed in different places, which is laughable on the face of it, is how do you put mines in areas that you do not control? And what they also want to do is clearly they want to create an equivalency between the access road to Artsakh and this corridor that they want through Sunni to Nakhchivan. And when there, frankly, there's not a legal equivalency, because there's countless ways to not get to Nakhchivan, and there's only one way to get to Artsakh. And all of this is essentially an intimidation tactic to push us to accept a formula that we otherwise would not accept. Now I'm going to move on to the second topic of the week, which is a resolution that was passed in the French Senate urging the Macron administration to place stringent sanctions on the regime in Baku because of its occupation of Armenian territory, because of POWs, its aggressions against Artsakh, and half a dozen other negative transgressions that are carried out on a daily basis by the regime in Baku. This Senate resolution passed overwhelmingly, but it's important to note that this is frankly just a resolution. This is not law. This is essentially a recommendation to the government, and it's a recommendation that was quickly rejected by the government, saying that this does not, this is being the Macron administration, that this is not their position. So what is it that we need to know about this? I think in the 10th percentile, I think this is something quite useful because I think it opens the door, it puts the discussion in play about the need for long-term sanctions in place to control the aggressive fascist nature of the Baku regime. But in the 90th percentile, this is what I call an FND, which is, you know, fooling naive diasporans. If the French are really interested in helping Armenia defend itself, we don't need symbolism. Sell us weapons. That would be far more functional. What we need to understand is that, in real terms, we have no friends. Even someone like President Macron, who I like, is one of the few European leaders that can see beyond his nose, is really not a friend of Armenia's. He is simply not our enemy, and we need to understand that distinction and understand it well. This actually brings us to a teaching moment about what kind of foreign relationships we have. We essentially have three kinds of relationships. The first one, which is the simplest one, are the countries who are our enemies. We know who they are, and I don't need to spell them out. And the best thing about them is that they will never betray you. The second group are countries or associations that are sometimes enemies, and sometimes they are not enemies. And in that category, you can put Russia, the European Union, Georgia. And the last are countries that are simply not enemies, and you can put the US, Iran, and India on that list. For us, really, the acid test of friendship, not friendship, for us is a simple one. Are you willing to sell us weapons? Or are you not willing to sell us weapons? Because if you're not willing to sell us weapons, then you're certainly not our friend. In most cases, you're our enemy. And why is this important? We have to understand in the context of the usefulness of a weak Armenia. Many of these countries, including our friends, find an Armenia that cannot defend itself far more useful to their interests than not. And why is that? Because an Armenia that cannot defend itself is an Armenia that cannot say no. Our job is to reverse that and create an Armenia that can say no. And the only way to do that is by strengthening ourselves militarily in all aspects to be able to defend our, to defend this country, and as importantly, the people living in Artsakh. Our third and last topic of the week is going to be a very interesting expose done in a website called Open Democracy, which is an excellent site, about a pay-to-play operation that was of a documentary that was paid for British Petroleum and organs of the Aliyev regime that was running on BBC as a piece of propaganda for the regime in Baku. And the people who paid for this quote-unquote documentary were British Petroleum and the Heydar Aliyev Foundation, which is controlled by the family. Obviously, it's actually the First Lady of Azerbaijan who actually controls the foundation. This documentary had a very special emphasis on the occupied city of Shushi, and a very respected Azeri journalist who lives in exile, Arzu Gebulova, said this foundation is in no way independent of the states. Actually, it's done to whitewash the image of the Azeri regime.
That's the wonders of Azerbaijan here on BBC World News.
Speaking at the launch of this film in Baku in September, the English presenter, Brittany Hughes, made a couple of very interesting statements, and let's try to decipher them. The first one is, she said, "I understand history not through politics. I don't get involved in politics at all." So we're trying to understand what she's saying. She's saying that she does not understand history through politics. Well, when, how do you manage to understand history otherwise if it isn't through politics? Trying to understand history without politics is to try to, is to sort of study physics without accepting the concept of gravity. Let's move on to the other statements this genius made during her presentation. This is what she says. "I do go to places which have extraordinary culture. So it was exceptional for me to get access to places when I came last time I could not go to because there was too much conflict there." It's interesting that she speaks about culture, because obviously what she is referring to, which is the occupied parts of Artsakh, is where the greatest cultural genocide in the world is happening right now. So this woman who actually cares or claims to care about culture is getting paid to film a video at the center of a cultural genocide, which is actually quite a remarkable achievement. She also mentions that she couldn't go to Shushi before. Obviously, what she's saying is I couldn't go there before what was the largest ethnic cleansing in Europe in this century. This makes you wonder about who she is and where she comes from. Obviously, there's plenty of people like her who are more than willing to sell their souls for, you know, a few gold coins here or there. So I have a business proposition for her that might actually help her even make more money. The Russian company Gazprom was probably more than willing to pay for you to do a documentary on the city of Mariupol, you know, in Ukraine that was occupied by Russians a couple of months ago. There's great cultural sites there. You can go study history and culture. And at the end of the day, the dollars that you get from the Russian government are going to be just as green as the dollars that you got from the Aliyev regime. Frankly, in my 35 years in politics, I have seen plenty of Betanis in the world. In fact, the world of media and politics is full of them. So I would encourage you to do this, Miss Betany, is because at the end of the day, what I've learned is that once you're a $2 operative, you're always a $2 operative. Thank you for joining us at this week's episode of Insights. Ahí la tiene Maradona, lo marcan dos, pisa la pelota Maradona, arranca por la derecha el genio del fútbol mundial y es el tercero a tocar para Borruchaga siempre Maradona, genio, 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 ta, 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 ta,